Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, the Media Project is underway here from WAMC. We've got some commentary going on before the microphones start, which gives us a chance to say we ought to get this underway. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, here with Dr. Alan Shartuck, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
I'm so glad you're here because I heard
Thank
a rumor
you.
That you were late.
Well, I was.
And therefore, I was a little worried that you weren't alive.
Oh.
But it turns out late means you're 10 minutes late.
Not the late Rex Smith.
Late for the show.
We'll talk fast, yeah. And that way we can get you ready for your next appearance. Anyway, Dr. Caitlin Brown is here, a journalism professor from College of St. Rose. Wonderful to see you once again, Caitlin.
Good morning, Rex. Good morning, Alan.
Longtime reporter and great journalist in the Capital Region for many years before she decided to...
Went over to the dark side?
Do what Dr. Shartuck did and go off and get a FUD. And here she is now. How about that? So we have issues to talk about. We got a letter because we always encourage people to write, and a candidate for the town board in the town of Riga, New York. Do you know where that is?
I do not.
R-I-G-A. Stan, not Stan the man, Stan Maine, says, "You hopeless liberal commentators, just can't get enough of your kid gloves. Alan said something to the effect that if it's an event, the media must cover it, and the reaction was tepid at best." So he says that's not true. He says, no, the media does not cover suicide, so it's not encourage suicides. The sports media now even ignores fans that run to the field to not encourage more of that behavior. The media largely avoids covering graphic automobile accidents with bloodied bodies. So far, he's right. There are things that we don't cover, even though they happen. But when the media covers a half dozen people half a planet away killed by a madman with a truck, knife, bomb, or rifle and makes the perpetrators into celebrities, covering every aspect of their typically pathetic lives, the media is doing society an injustice. Just because you have a picture of bloody streets or video of panicked people does not mean you have to devote an hour to covering who the perpetrators were, what they cared about, who they worshipped, what groups claimed responsibility. He says the broadcast media, the broadcast media is guilty of negligence in excessive coverage of these incidents that make people feel unsafe when driving from their home to work is a much riskier proposition than being injured by a terrorist for anybody in this country. So what he's saying is essentially that there are things that we cover too much, that there shouldn't be coverage, I think, of these terrorist attacks.
Caitlin?
So there are, I would observe in his note that he said we don't cover suicide. And while we are careful about when suicide is covered, most recently, the case of the text messaging that resulted or did not result, according to the judge, in the suicide of a young man not far from here was covered extensively by all media, not just broadcasts. In fact, I got all my coverage out of the print journalism when that teenager put himself in a car and exposed himself to carbon monoxide, got out, was encouraged by text message to get back in. So that is one instance where suicide has been covered. To the bigger point, which I think is there wretched excess, which was the term we often used in the newsroom. Are we overdoing it? Are we covering it too much? Oftentimes, we do err on the side of covering too much, but for fear of missing a story, we have an obligation to share with our audiences what the story is, cover it from multiple perspectives, try to be as fair and even-keeled as we can. And as a result, it may sometimes feel as though it's overcovered. But I also think that sometimes there is a sensational aspect, particularly in broadcasts, which we need to be careful of, just in the tone of how information is presented.
Well, you know, Rex Kalin often talks about, and I've quoted him many, many times on this, how 1,000 planes land successfully every day at the airport, but we cover the one that didn't make it. So there is always, you know, this Maslow road on descending priorities. We have descending priorities in this. If we have a worldwide conspiracy in which a group like ISIS is saying, we're going to take you out, and we get examples of how they're doing that. And an example is they drive vans into people on bridges, and they do that with some consistency. Yeah, you know, you want to cover that. You want to say, this is what society is facing right now. So you can't bury your head in the sand and say, because it's going to make people uncomfortable, we're not going to do it.
What about his further point that Stan makes here in this is, and let's not even get started on the epic fail the media provided, he says, in excessive Donald Trump coverage that resulted in literally the worst human being on earth being elected president of the United States. So was it too much coverage of Donald Trump that gave him his platform? Would it have been a responsible thing for the, let's talk just first about the cable networks, because that's sort of the easiest target for us since none of us here are employed by them. Would it have been more responsible for them to say, you know, this guy Trump is just full of hot air. Let's not cover all of his stuff as much as he was doing.
Well, that was always a big argument in this last campaign. However, let's go back to the 1930s and Hitler on the way up and people saying, he's a fool. Let's ignore him. So, you know, it's a tough call. When you ignore somebody, you don't point out that there's a danger. Now, there's a lot of pointing to Trump as a danger. But on the other hand, you know, it's always, and this letter writer points it out correctly, it's always a matter of balance. It's a matter of balance.
These are tough decisions. He says ratings are nice things for radio, TV, and cable stations to have. Very nice that he exempts newspapers from the blame here. But at what cost? Terrorist activities will come much less often when we learn to ignore terrorists instead of making them stars.
Well, you know, Rex, you're sitting there. I've talked about this before, but you're sitting there and you're the news director at the CNN. And all of a sudden, Fox and the other guys start to eat your lunch. Guess what? You're not the news director anymore. So you may think that there is a ability to make these decisions, but the greater impetus is economic. And you just can't say, okay, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to cover Donald Trump. Because every time they put Donald Trump on the air, their ratings went up.
But the genesis of story coverage based on fear is a poor motivator for the media or for any decision. We should not be making our decisions based on fear of being scooped or fear of being left out of the conversation. It should be more of a proactive decision on the part of news directors. Why are we going to do this coverage? Why do we think it's necessary to do this coverage?
That, well, I think, was what Alan's point earlier. That was I think your argument was good about ignoring Hitler in the 1930s, but I think he was getting more to the reality of the impulse, almost the competitive impulse that comes to a news director saying, whoa, I got to have this because they're going to have this.
But Rexy, it isn't only competitive. It's reality. You may think that if Kaylin is sitting in the chair at CNN, she's a decision maker. She's now a professor, so she's looking down her nose at these people. Professors are allowed to do that. We should. It should be. It should be. People should be. Well, yeah, I get that. But there is a reality that the person with the DNA sitting in that chair is not really a person. It's just somebody who is following along with the impetus that they have to follow with. Otherwise, they don't survive.
I prefer to think of you professors as idealists and guides. Isn't that how you prefer to think of yourselves as opposed to looking down your noses at we poor laboring stiffs?
Well, that's why I was always such a great professor. Because
Is that why?
Because I never bought that. You know, there's a reality here. And I'm saying stay with the reality. Now, you know, our letter writer, Kaylin, they're quite right. We wish it weren't that way, but it is that way, and there's no avoiding it.
So thanks, Stan Main. Actually, by the way, the town of Riga is in Monroe County.
Isn't there one in Russia also?
Well, that would be a different Riga. I don't think Mr. Main is writing from Russia. We may have some listeners in St. Petersburg, but I don't know. Thanks, he says, I enjoy the show. And his concluding line is, Alan, you're a classic nudge. Isn't that a compliment?
Well, no, a nudge is somebody who's a pain in the neck. Or somewhere lower.
Oh, I'm not really, fault my colloquialisms or my Yiddish or whatever it is that nudge is actually derived from. Anyway, I thought it was sort of a nice thing to say to somebody.
Bless your heart, Rex.
I'd like to just chip in that we professors are also working stiff, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, you were a working stiff. You worked for Rex. You worked on the Times, or before Rex, but on the Times Union. But now you have this power to just go in and say to your students, this is the way that we think these people ought to be behaving.
Oh, I like to think of it as a privilege, not a power.
Absolutely.
And I tell them in the first class each semester, it is a privilege to work with you, just as we have the privilege of sitting here now and having these conversations and helping to influence public dialogue. I mean, that's a big privilege, right?
Well,
I hope you're not taking my critique too harshly.
No, but I don't feel very powerful at all in a room full of teenagers.
I can imagine. Yeah, you don't have to pay any attention to what he's saying. Don't worry. It's fine.
I'm a nudge.
So what about this notion of the great privilege of doing the work of journalism? There's a new study out from Poynter Institute, which is an advanced journalism study center in St. Petersburg, Florida, that they did a survey of hundreds of journalists around the country on trying to balance journalism and parenthood. They were looking as to whether their employers are family friendly.
That's a great question.
Isn't it something? I remember a hardworking New York Times reporter who worked so many hours that he developed a sleep disorder and actually got up and stumbled in sleepwalking down the steps and ended in a pile at the bottom of the steps. And his wife, running down the steps, reported later that she heard herself screaming, "Damn the New York Times! Damn the New York Times!" as her husband lay unconscious on the floor, blaming the newspaper's determination to get him the work out of him for his ailing.
So the question, of course, and I'm very, very interested in what Kaylin says. I mean, this is a very sexist country. There's no question about it. And our presumption is always that the woman... Now, people will write me and say, not in my house, but, you know, that the woman is going to be the prime provider for the children and the prime caretaker for the children. So I know that WAMC, where we're responding from, quite frequently somebody will say, I've got it, and it's almost always a woman. I've got to take care of my kid today. I got to bring the kid to the doctor, or my kid has strep throat and I have to worry about it. Now again, Kaylin, before you start to pontificate, I want...
He's so glad to have another PhD in the room because he's always the one who's been the pontificator.
Here's the thing. We are dealing with a concept known as is versus should. And you're a shouldist, if there ever was one. And I'm an isist.
Huh.
So when I was choosing to have children as a full-time reporter, working with Rex at the Times Union, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
My husband and I made the decision that I would stay home. The Hearst Corporation, and I'm not getting paid to say this, provided me excellent opportunities to stay home and held my job for me. So that was a decision we made because it was a better choice in our particular circumstance. And so I had a great opportunity there. But during the time I was there, I worked all the time, not so much that I developed a sleep disorder. But I did it because I loved it, and that really didn't get addressed that much in here. It talks about how much time reporters spend and news people spend in the newsroom, and that it's sort of this construct where everybody's forced to be there. I loved doing daily journalism. How could you not? I walk into the classroom, too, and say, this is the best job you will ever have.
Well,
and I can rattle off on any day 20 things it would be fun to do in a day of journalism. I loved it so much that I delayed becoming a mother. I was too busy having fun.
But you didn't delay being a professor and walking out on that job, which was the best job in the entire world, did you?
My children actually attended my hooding when I got my PhD.
That's not the issue. I'm not here to insult you.
You're not at all. So you can do multiple. I mean, you got to choose your path.
Okay, but
right?
Wait. Here's the question, Kaylin. When the kid's nurse called up from the school and said, kid's got to go home, got a severe case of strep throat, who intuitively, and please just give me the right answer here that I'm looking for, who went to the school to pick up the kid?
He is going to love this. My husband. I was a teacher. You cannot miss school if you're a teacher. No way. My husband went.
Uh-huh.
They were sick.
Whereas if she had been a reporter.
No, I'm talking about when you were a teacher.
If she had been a reporter in our newsroom, there would have been somebody who would have picked up the story for her. We try to do that. That's actually what this survey says. 2/3 of the employers offered paid parental leave. More than half the respondents said the employer allowed them them to adjust work start and stop times. And it says that this is while only 14% of private employers in the U.S. offer paid leave, that means that journalists are actually getting a better deal than most people. And I think it's true.
So there's no sexism in journalism, right?
See, we're talking about two different things.
Yeah.
You're only talking about sexism. We're talking about raising kids. And I think that this is part of the sexism implicit in your questioning here. And you're only thinking about women as opposed to men.
Huh?
Yeah.
I don't get that.
It's a partnership.
Absolutely.
If you're fortunate enough to have a partner.
You mean it should be a partnership. I'm telling you, there are women listening all over this listening area right now. Some say, well, yes, my husband is a great guy and did this. But they are listening and they are saying no. When the chips
I think you
fell.
Need more millennial employees. That's what I'd say. Because I think that you're missing I think you're living a few decades ago. Because actually, there are a lot of workplaces really try to accommodate this because of the years of, like, my poor friend falling down the steps because he worked too hard. I think we all understand, and the millennial employees force us to understand, that they need to have lives outside work.
Let's put it this way. Nobody is more open to what you are suggesting than this public radio station where you are usurping the microphones.
Sounds like Donald Trump. You
right.
know, nobody's a better
right,
friend of the
right.
blacks than
just,
I am.
Just great. So you make a point. Nevertheless, I'm quite sure I'm right.
Well, that's refreshing. In any case, you know, it is difficult. I mean, having just said this about somebody else picking up the story, it's really hard. If you're covering a presidential race, let's say you're one of the reporters who's on the plane, that's an impossible situation for a parent. It's really difficult. But it's the same thing if you're an opera singer and you're traveling from one gig to another. There are a lot of jobs that are really tough to make a work-life balance. But, you know, one of the reasons why you want to do it if you're in a newsroom is because people have to understand what they're writing about. And if you have journalists who don't reflect the realities of the work-life balance and don't appreciate family life, you're not going to have the good coverage of that.
Okay, let's not beat this to death. We understand that we've done the issue. I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
Because both of you are really good at this. How do I pitch a story that nobody wants to really touch? Let me give you an example. We have a spate and we have a camera there, so we know who done it. We have a spate of people who are coming into our parking lot and on a daily basis almost and peeing on the wall. Men and women. Now, the women don't pee on the wall. They turn around. But we have these pictures of this happening. Now, I think it's a very important story, but I think, you know, news media may shy away from it because it's déclassé.
I think it may not be as important a story as you think it is. I think that
really?
If there's a really good story, people would write it. I don't know.
Well, I think you've just told it, so you have now shed light on the subject. And
that's
the
why I
that
did
exists.
It.
There
yeah.
you go.
But also, you could, if you were so inclined, and I agree with Rex, I don't know that there's a story there, but you could certainly file a Freedom of Information request to find out how many citations have been issued in the city of Albany on that issue.
Yeah,
because that's a code violation.
Now, that might be an interesting story, wouldn't it, if you do it from that approach?
Code violation. Yes,
yeah, it could be.
I mean, you could. You
see
could,
that you,
you
do
could
it, Rex.
Into it. FOI is a friend of each of us who have an interest in getting
yeah.
information out there. So
I would note that in New York City, the police commissioner has just announced that they're not going to pursue public urination prosecution.
As a summonsable offense.
Just taking too much time from cops. They'll just hustle people along and harass them until they don't
so
do
would
it.
You, so that's good of you, liberal of you, Rex. Would you mind if somebody, you came outside of the Times Union, a guy was peeing against the wall in your facility, your gleaming white facility?
Well, the Times Union is in the suburbs, and I think that there's a certain aspect to urban life that you've embraced by citing the radio station here, which I commend. I think it's great to have an urban center here for a public radio station, and that's just one of the aspects of urban life that I think you deal with.
Well, I think my urban colleagues here are as offended by people peeing against our wall as I am. I don't want to throw everybody into that. I'm just simply saying there are people who do disgusting things, and they should be held accountable in the public media.
And what would happen? You think that it's going to make a difference if the Times Union does a story about it?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Because I think what happens is the Times Union is a very important newspaper, really important.
Well, so now I feel much better.
So if the mayor, is sitting there at her desk and sees a continuing series on public urination, and we have all of the pictures to prove it, it seems to me that the word may go out to the police to, you know, go around and make sure this isn't happening.
Well, has the question of public facilities been broached? I know it was presented to me just earlier today in this very building. So has that question been approached?
Not by me.
Has anyone asked City Hall if they would try to solve the problem?
That's not my job. I just don't want people coming into the parking lot and disgusting people. It's unhealthy.
You just want the taxpayers of Albany to take care of the problem, and you can go home to your nice home in the Berkshires and not worry about people peeing on your lawn.
You should talk.
It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. He's Alan Shartok, Kalen Brown, and Rex Smith here with you. You know, this is a Brown, Smith, and Shartok. That's interesting. It doesn't, you know, when we have Fussfeld, we have these more interesting names here. But, you know, Brown and Smith, how boring is that?
I agree. Kick them off.
Top four in the country.
So just a sign of the way things are, the state of the news media, the Pew Research Center's annual State of the News Media report shows that Americans are watching Sunday morning political talk shows much more, listening to podcasts much more now in previous years. In fact, I just read in the upfronts, which is where the networks take their new shows to see if for the new season to sell them to the advertising community, and all the advertising buyers come and watch the shows, and they bid up the commercial prices and buy commercials before the shows the season begins in the fall. In the upfronts, all of a sudden, people are buying newscasts. Advertisers who typically have been only appearing on newscasts with ads appealing to, you know, people with my color of hair, just to say old. Nowadays, suddenly, newscasts are becoming much more interesting.
And we all know it goes down to a single word, which is Trump. And what has happened is, of course, Trump presents such a challenge to so many people that people are watching more television. It's that simple. They are watching television, they're doing podcasts, and they are doing historically fast fund drives for public radio. So I think it's quite clear that if Trump were to go away and a more boring president would be there and a more sane president, you would find the opposite happening.
If people are choosing to be more informed and they're listening to podcasts and watching Sunday morning television because of the current political climate, that seems to be a good thing for all of us if individuals are choosing to be more informed. Hopefully they'll make better decisions.
So what do you do about a situation like we've had in recent weeks where a huge piece of legislation has been really shaped outside the view of the press, the American Health Care Act, which affects one-sixth of the economy? It's very hard to get media attention onto that issue, isn't
it? Well, I think the media has been giving a lot of attention to the fact that nobody knows what's going on. But, of course, they don't have access. And for some reason, the usual suspects, the guys who break these stories, the Washington Post and the New York Times, haven't been as effective at figuring out what is going on behind those closed doors as usual.
But another way to tell the healthcare story is from the ground up and get out there and talk to the people who are in need of health care. In fact, there's an interesting candidate in Wisconsin, Randy Bryce, who's running against Paul Ryan for Congress.
Huh.
And he begins his new commercial with an image of him speaking with his mother, who is on a number of medications, and what the threat of the change in the health care coverage might do for her. He's an iron worker. It is fascinating, and I'm very excited to watch that race. But I think
he'll win.
Even in that commercial, I won't make a
prediction.
I will not.
He will not.
I will not make a pick on that. But more interesting is the fact he humanized by choosing to use his mother, who seemed all in favor of this commercial he's doing. It's a very slick commercial of talking about what would happen to her if she misses her medications and doesn't get her medications. And I believe she's diagnosed with MS. And that this would cause her undue pain and suffering, and to bring it to that level. And while that wasn't a piece of journalism, it was certainly the media.
That's exactly what the journalists ought to be doing. And here's what Trudy Lieberman of Columbia Journalism Review says, right along the lines of what you're saying, Kalen. Health coverage that merely tracks the Beltway drama of the AHCA risks overlooking the diverse and nuanced health needs of cities and counties. As they watch D.C. from a distance, more health reporters need to scrutinize their own community's needs and use local concerns to shape their coverage. So she's agreeing with you. You need the local stuff. And we're out of time.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that amazing? We just zipped right through this program once again. So we made up for the fact that I was late. All right. Kalen Brown, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kalen Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
The bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow.